We're just now talking about how Black women were at the center of these movements, but because of racism and misogyny, their voices and their experiences have been erased.
Hello, and welcome to Your Bristol Life, a new series of 5 podcasts shining a light on underrepresented aspects of Bristol's history. This BCFM series was made with the Bristol Cable, Bristol History Podcast, and In the Dark. This episode was created by Daniel Edmund and is about Henrietta Lacks.
Hello everyone, my name is Daniel Edmund. I'm a speaker, presenter, consultant, and filmmaker, currently based in Bristol, England. In this episode, I'll be speaking about the fairly new statue of Henrietta Lacks that was erected at the University of Bristol last year in 2021. This is the first public statue of a Black woman, made by a Black woman, to be permanently installed in the UK. Helen Wilson Rowe is the artist from Bristol who created the statue.
Henrietta Lacks was a sort of poor Black tobacco farmer who grew up in Southern Virginia. And in 1951, she was diagnosed with cervical cancer. At that point, she had moved up to Baltimore. And she went to Johns Hopkins for treatment because it was the only place anywhere near her that treated Black patients. So this was the era of segregation. And the hospitals had the quote-unquote colored wards, which was the only place that Black patients or poor patients could be seen. And without telling her, before treating her tumor, her doctor just cut a little piece and put it in a dish. And he sent that down the hall to George Guy, who was the head of tissue culture research at Hopkins. And George Guy had been trying to grow human cells outside of the body for decades, and it had never worked. And for reasons that remained a mystery, Henrietta cells just never died. So they started doubling their numbers every 24 hours. They went from like one dish to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16, and then just sort of pretty quickly took over the lab. And George Guy started calling his colleagues and saying, "I think I have the first immortal human cell line," which is what they're called, which means they'll just grow and divide forever. And in response, his colleagues all said, "Great, can we have some?" Because there had been this enormous effort to grow cells outside the body for 100 years, because we really didn't know a lot about cells at that point. And in response to all of his colleagues asking for them, George Guy sent them to anyone who wanted to use them for research. And they spread around the world this way really fast. And they were one of the most important things that happened to medicine. They were used to help create the polio vaccine. They went up in the first space missions to see what would happen to human cells in zero gravity. They were used to create our most important cancer medications like vincristine and tamoxifen. Her cells were the first ever cloned, her genes some of the first ever mapped. They were used to help develop in vitro fertilization. Basically, almost all of the vaccines we take today can be traced back to research with her cells. There isn't a person out there who hasn't benefited from research on her cells.
That was a BBC News report from 2020 on the immortal cells of Henrietta Lacks that changed the world. As I read about the story of Henrietta Lacks, the main theme that stood out for me was the importance of honoring and protecting Black women. And that is the theme I would like to zoom in on for the duration of this episode. With me, I have 3 different contributors who will be offering their personal and professional opinion on the matter. I would like to dedicate this episode to Henrietta Lacks, Helen Wilson Rowe, and Black women everywhere. Thank you for your contributions to us all. Now first up, we have artist, activist, and former Bristol Lord Mayor, Cleo Lake. Cleo, thank you for being with me here today. How are you?
Oh, hi, Daniel. Yeah, good to be here. It's trying to be sunny here in Bristol, so I think it's going to be quite a good day.
As you know, we have the statue of Henrietta Lacks erected at the University of Bristol. Can you tell us about the process of getting that up and who funded it?
Well, I think my understanding and kind of way into this kind of journey of how the statue came about would begin with obviously the artist who created the statue, Helen Wilson Rowe. So Helen, like myself, kind of lived in Easton for some time. So I sort of knew about Helen as an artist, kind of growing up in Bristol, and was aware of some of her work. I think probably maybe her Marlon Thomas portrait, somehow I'd seen that a few years ago. But I'm, you know, it was obviously a couple of years in the discussions and the planning. But again, it would have been 2020, I think. For whatever reason, Bristol University, and I think Helen had already started discussions with a science department at Bristol Uni about this idea of getting involved with supporting the exhibition that Helen had for Henrietta Lacks and also potentially the statue. And for whatever reason, the kind of stopgap in that conversation was that the university wanted to display Helen's work, the two portraits of myself as Lord Mayor and the one of Henrietta Lacks that was formerly in the Lord Mayor's parlour. So those two portraits were displayed in the Wills Memorial Building, and they may still be there, actually. I think they've been there for a couple of years. However, when it was kind of like the launch of them kind of being unveiled in the Wills Memorial Building, again, quite a significant place, location in our kind of timeline, you know, I wasn't planning to say anything. Obviously, Helen said a few words, important people at the university said a few words. But then Helen said, Cleo, you're going to say anything. And I hadn't planned to, I hadn't planned any words. But, you know, I was aware at that time that, you know, there was this kind of vision of Helen that Helen had to do a statue of Henrietta Lacks, and had been in conversations with the university. But I think the bottom line at that point was that there was no funds available to make it happen. And I sort of spoke to that fact with the words that I said, and, you know, expressed how, what an important person for everyone, the legacy and life of Henrietta Lacks, and, you know, the incredible amount of research that Helen had done into her life, and to be able to present this and bring it to life to more people, and how sad it was and regretful that a huge institution like Bristol University couldn't find the means to make the next step in this journey happen, and that it kind of always felt that no matter how great we are or how good our ideas are, it's always a case of seemingly have to beg for some action or some investment. And I think both the words that I said and the words that Helen said really kind of resonated with some of the people there from the university. And so as a consequence, there was a bit of a U-turn, and the university then decided that they could find some funds to make it happen. And I think that was, you know, a significant step towards the fantastic addition to the Bristol landscape that is the Henrietta Lacks statue, which of course was planned way before the Edward Colston statue toppled. But isn't it great that the next statue to go up is of an African heritage woman?
Thank you to Cleo for speaking with me. Next up, we have American Senior Policy Analyst Marissa Edmond, who is currently based in Wheaton, Maryland. Marissa Edmond, thank you for being with me today. How are you?
Hey, Danny, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
For you, you know, can you speak about, you know, obviously with your experience being an African-American woman living in the United States, you know, there's also this theme of Black women's contributions to the advancement of society and how they're often overlooked and or erased. You know, we see this time and time again throughout history. And so do you have any thoughts on that particular thought or provocation as a Black woman living in America?
Definitely. I mean, Black women are often at the center of these social movements that we're seeing in 2022. They were doing this work decades ago, but often their work was being co-opted by their white counterparts. We're still learning now about all of the contributions that Black women had in women's suffrage, in the LGBTQIA+ space, We're just now talking about how Black women were at the center of these movements, but because of racism and misogyny, their voices and their experiences have been erased. So I'm really excited that we're uplifting one Black woman in particular whose contributions to healthcare have been, you know, beyond what I'm sure she would have imagined and her family would have imagined.
One of the things I want to speak to as well is about how Black women's bodies are treated, discussed, and portrayed in media and wider society. You know, this is something that has been spoken about a lot through social media and through, you know, think pieces online and, you know, just part of the cultural conversation that's been happening, particularly over the past few years. You know, what is your view on how Black women are portrayed in media?
Well, I have several opinions on that. I will speak from my own experience as a Black woman who was sexualized as a child because of the way that my body was. And I know that's not a experience that is unique to me. Black women, Black girls are often punished harsher in school because they're perceived to be older than they are. And that ties into the adultification and the over-sexualization of Black women. And that permeates, as you just said, through media. Black women have to have a certain type of body. They have to have a certain type of skin color. They have to have a certain type of hair texture in order to be considered beautiful. That's changing a little bit now, I think. But those undertones are still there. It is still really hard for a dark-skinned Black woman to get the same respect and the same time, attention, and opportunities as a light-skinned woman. That is, you know, those ideas still permeate through media, and it happens in media and also in something as trivial as a job interview. We talk about pretty privilege and light skin privilege, and those are not just, you know, anecdotes. There's actual facts and figures on how people are perceived in interviews and how that takes money out of a dark-skinned Black woman's pocket, right? They do not get that job opportunity whereas another person would, a white person would, or a lighter-skinned person would.
Thank you again to Marissa for sharing so openly with all of us. Last but not least, we have Bobby Ogilvie, who is a brand strategist and developer who was born in America and is now based here in Bristol. Bobby, how are you?
Hi, Daniel. How are your chakras today?
My chakras are good today. I've got a bit of energy, different energies I'm sitting with, but overall I'm doing good.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Yeah, how about yourself?
I'm good. I would not say my chakras are balanced, but awareness is the first step, isn't it?
It is. Awareness is definitely the first step. As we look at the life of Henrietta Lacks, you know, we see so many different themes that pertain to Black women and how their bodies are treated, how Black women are treated in the healthcare system around the world, and so many other themes that are so poignant when we look at the life of Henrietta Lacks and her legacy. As a Black woman living in the UK, and more specifically living in Bristol, how has your experience been in the healthcare system?
It's interesting. If we want to zoom kind of all the way out, you know, looking at Henrietta Lacks, who has become almost an avatar for a lot of these conversations, there is a through line between, you know, treatment in the States and treatment here, where one of the major things is, you know, often Black pain is not believed, right? Mm-hmm. Or misdiagnosed, or look at things like PCOS or endometriosis, you know, take years and years and years. In sickle cell, things that predominantly affect the Black community that are just kind of underfunded, under-researched, etc. So once you get through thinking about like the structural things and then thinking about the personal things, like, is the person in front of me even believing what I'm saying? Are they taking me seriously? Do they even have the capacity to take me seriously? Because here, you know, doctors see you in 15 minute slots and they kind of have to be generalist and do everything in that time. I think one of the biggest differences is that, at least in the States, which is not a good thing at all, you are really paying out the nose for healthcare. Mm-hmm. So there is almost a degree of agency that you feel like you might have a bit more. And that doesn't actually lead to better outcomes at all, but at least you feel like you can speak up a little bit more. And I think that's one of the big things that I noticed when I moved here, was just that there's very little agency unless you are able and prepared and have the capacity to make a nuisance of yourself. And so, you know, one of the big jokes that people make is like, well, at least you have free healthcare, but it's not free. It comes at a big mental and physical cost.
Thank you to Cleo, Bobby, and Marissa for speaking with me. I really appreciate the time and energy they gave to contribute to this podcast. All the conversations you heard were much longer than what was presented, so all that was shared in this episode is a snapshot of a much more detailed conversation. But I do hope you were able to take something away from it regardless. My name is Daniel Edmond. Thank you for listening.